Hello and welcome to the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Michael Oliver, founder of Momentum Structural Analysis. And Michael, it's great to have you on the show as we do this periodically, just to get an update on how you're looking at the markets, not just from a pricing technical standpoint, but also from a momentum basis. You view the charts in both lights, how the pricing moves, but also how it moves in relation to momentum. You made a great point on your weekend update to subscribers about what you were seeing in the U.S. equity markets, in particular, the S&P. You had noted a few weeks back that there was nothing in particular on the pricing chart, but on the momentum chart, there was definitely a breakdown in the S&P, and we've seen that follow through now in price. So maybe just set us up with what you're seeing in the U.S. equity markets here and now.
Yeah, I think it's very important, not just for the equities, but for other markets as well. You know, tectonic plates bumping into each other. But yeah, at the beginning of the month, the first trading day of April, we had sell signals on NASDAQ 100 and S&P based on monthly momentum. You look at a price chart, it looked comfy. It was quiet up there. In fact, when we got our signal, it sort of fiddled around for the next 4 or 5 days, and then it started to precipitously drop. We dropped 5% in a matter of 3 weeks, let's say. No, actually 2.5 weeks. And of course, during that time, gold was going up. But anyway, it looks like the beginning of the downturn resumption. What we saw in early 2022 told us that if, from an investment point of view, now not a trader's point of view, if you've been long stocks for the past dozen to 13 years, biggest stock bull bubble in U.S. history, it's time to get out. Now, again, that was in January of 2022, just off the highs. And we had a big drop after that. And then, of course, from October of 2022, we've had a recovery, arduous arm wrestling. But finally, for a couple indices, S&P and NASDAQ, because they're front end loaded with four or five of the big names, they made marginal new highs, single digit percentages. And now we're starting to give that back. Where you drop another 3, 4, or 5%, you're back below the 2022 highs and on your way down. And we think it could get quite serious because it's not just the what I described as monthly momentum, which is what you call intermediate trend. In other words, its consequences might last several months, but we start to trigger bigger stuff again that says, nah, you're not just having a correction. You're re-entering what was indicated in early 2022. Namely, this is a major topping process. And I think that's where we are. And I think it's going to unfold. I don't think there's an escape for the stock market. It doesn't look like something dramatic and sudden, but it will be dramatic ultimately. Not right away, but it looks like we're topping out and the teasing new highs due to what? Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Nvidia. They explain the entire move to new highs in those two indexes. And they're starting to break now, especially Apple is getting into very dangerous levels. Anyway, that's what we see there.
Well, it seems like in general, as the equity markets have been correcting this time, we have started seeing more inflows into hard assets, commodities across the board. So before we dive into some of the individual commodities, maybe just a comment from you. We were talking off mic. You're seeing the same kind of thing, that there's possibly a rotation going on here from equities into commodities.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, commodities don't always move with gold, by the way. For example, from 2015 bear low in gold, $1,050, by the time it got to summer of 2020, it had doubled. Well, if you go back and look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index from December 2015 through the summer of 2020, it went down. So there was no correlation. But I think there's a correlation now where commodities are following gold back up. I think they're resurrecting themselves. You know, the Bloomberg peaked, most commodities peaked about several weeks after the Russia-Ukraine war began. So people who like to blame that war for causing the advance are totally wrong. In fact, they peaked when that war began. Okay. And they pull back about halfway since, giving back about half what they gained since 2020 lows. I'm talking the commodity complex in general. But they based out for the last year. Very boring action, in fact. And we're getting a level this month on too many commodities and also the Bloomberg Commodity Index that argue, base is completed, we're starting up again. The second major up leg is about to begin. And this happens to be coincident with gold. And I think some asset managers out there who perceive the risk in the stock market and are skeptical about it. But they have to be long, of course, because they compete with their peers. And if you're not long the market while it's going up, you lose your client base. So they have to be long, but they're still skeptical. You give them the least excuse to start to shift assets, you know, take 5% of their stock portfolio and move it into commodity-related assets, then that could be significant. Now, you know, for example, Stanley Druckenmiller back in mid-February did the what most people thought was a stupid thing. He went in and bought Newmont and Barrick Gold. And I'm sure most portfolio managers at that time were chuckling, you know, behind his back. Ha ha, what an idiot, you know. Well, both those major mining stocks have advanced significant percent since then. And they're beginning to break out as well in terms of long-term momentum. So he made the choice that, nah, you know, we need to, you know, move out of some tech stocks and move into gold-related. And I think you're going to get more of that as the technical evidence starts to show itself, that there's enough skeptics in the stock market to move some assets. And it doesn't take a lot of movement of assets from the stock market to affect the commodities quite a bit, especially the gold miners.
Boy, that's the truth. It's such a small and thinly traded market when you put it in comparison to some of those tech giants. I think all of the gold mining equities can fit into the market cap of just Home Depot, for example. So yeah, it doesn't take
right.
much.
Yeah.
But let's start off with gold then, because it is a monetary metal and it is a safe haven, and it seems to be pulling in some inflows, even though it's down today in general over the last couple months. It's been pulling in some of that safe haven bid. How do you see it set up technically, gold?
Oh, it's we think the acceleration phase of the bull market that actually began from the bear low in late 2015, we turned based on annual momentum. Now, we don't use normal momentum metrics that you find on your quote screen, by the way. We have our own proprietary methods. But in February of 2016, MSA put out a major buy signal. We had been bearish on gold since 2012, by the way, up through the 2015 low. But in February 2016, gold came up through $1,140, and at that 90 bucks off the low, we said, that's it, it's over, we're going up, bull market's beginning. Nothing has changed since then in terms of very long-term momentum trend metrics. They've all remained positive despite pullbacks here and there and so forth, or the last 3.5 years of sideways. We think the recent action, not just price, but the momentum factors have said, okay, we're re-engaged, we're coming out of this platform that we've created since 2020 highs. And, you know, it's been more or less sideways. And sure enough, price got the message a few weeks later and we boomed, you know, up to 2,400. And I think that's indicative of the change in the tone and temper of that market. In other words, rather than this arm wrestling bull market that we've seen since the 2015 low, we're now going to get an acceleration, a more aggressive angle of ascent. And I think the leaders in that will, while gold is the mama market, will be the miners and silver. I think they'll switch to outperform status versus gold. So though we're very aggressively bullish on gold, we think that silver and the miners are the better place to be going forward.
Well, let's talk silver. It's the lesser precious metal, but it's also an industrial metal. It had been kind of stuck in a range for a while, but just recently it finally popped up above 26 resistance and got up in 28, even got up to that $30 resistance level and then ratcheted back down again. But it has been a little peppier and the gold-silver ratio did come down a little bit. How are you looking at silver?
Yeah, no, we measure also we do it a little differently than the gold-silver ratio. We divide silver price into gold and we get a percent. If you go back over the last 50 years and pick out 1 month every year that was the highest reading on the spread relationship between silver and gold, you'll find that there are so many times in the last 50 years, and not just a few, but a handful and more, where silver has been up to 2 to 3% of the price of gold. Now, so what? Well, right now it's just above 1%. Well, you know, even at gold at the current price, you know, let's say $2,400, if you took 2% times 2,400, silver would be near $50. Okay. But it's so routine that it gets up there. In fact, in the bull markets prior, such as the 79 to 80 surge in gold and silver, and also in the 2010, 2011 final year or so in that bull market, the ratio got up there to 2.5% or so. The issue then is, okay, well, assume gold's going higher. Well, you know, how high could gold go? Well, you go back and to mid 1970s, you'll see gold was 35 bucks and went to 200 by 75. Okay. Then from the 1976 low through 1980, it went from 103 to 850. And then from the 2000 low, around $250, it went to 1920. So we've had three bull markets in 50 years that have attained something like 6.5 times to 8-fold moves from bear low to bull high. It's almost routine. In other words, it's done it three times. Well, we started from 1,050. You do the math. You had an 8-fold move, you go to $8,000. Is that abnormal? No, it's what it's done three times before in 50 years in terms of ratio advance. And we certainly have fundamental factors in play now, and especially about to come more obviously in play when that stock market breaks down, that could easily drive gold to that norm in terms of ratio gain. Well, if you got gold to a norm, 8-fold move, 8,000, and did 2% of that, well, silver's off the page at that point. So anyway, yeah, we favor silver in the miners at this point. We think they're vastly undervalued to gold, and they're going to reassert themselves.
Well, I can only imagine where the mining stocks would actually go in that kind of a move in gold or silver if it was to go up multi-fold, 6 to 8-fold like that. But let me ask you a question. We get a lot of pushback when people throw out bigger targets from people saying, it's different now, Michael. They didn't have cryptos back in the 70s. They didn't have meme stocks. They didn't have all these ETFs in gold that get pushed around in the paper markets. Do you think there's any merit to that, that maybe there's a more fragmented market now and maybe the moves in gold and silver and the related mining stocks won't be as extreme as in the past because of a more fragmented speculative market?
I think it's going to be more dramatic than before. The reason is I think we're facing a crisis that is of dimensions beyond normal stock market bear trends. And we know what happens when stock market goes into a bear trend. The Fed cuts, 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 does QE, does anything they can do to save certain favored paper assets. Right now, they have two asset categories that aren't really going to behave well. The stock market's beginning to reveal its true self. And the bond market, frankly, is desperate looking. I'm talking U.S. government bonds in particular. We had a crash in the T-bond market last summer to fall. That got out of hand. We had a V-bottom low back then in October, which we predicted and caught. And we said, once we had the rebound into December, we said, okay, get out. The V-bottom rally is over. We thought there'd be a pullback, but this pullback's getting a little bit more serious than we even thought it would be. There's a potential risk that T-bonds could go back down in price and possibly even take out the low we saw last year, meaning higher yields. And we know that's having a choking effect on various key economic sectors. And I think that's something that very much concerns the Fed, but they can't talk about it because it would reveal panic. But there's no question that they realize that end of the market is outside of their direct control. And therefore, it's of great concern, government debt. They don't mention it in their press conferences, but I almost guarantee that it's mentioned. I know Janet Yellen is very much nervous about it. So anyway, the excuse for the central banks, I'm not talking the Fed, just the Fed, ECB, BOJ, et cetera, to go berserk again, I think will be there. And it will be there fairly suddenly. We also have another variable that's not priced into the markets. And I keep saying it. I've been saying it for the last year plus. Now I'm hearing it elsewhere. Political situation worldwide, but especially in the U.S., there's no copacetic outcome for this coming election. No matter who wins the election, the outcome will not be copacetic. Quite possibly, it won't even be peaceful. Now, there's some technical validation of that. The University of Virginia Department of Politics conducted a poll of Democrat voters likely to vote for Biden, likely Trump voters. They asked them some very pregnant questions. This is last October now. And some of the questions were like this. You know, if the other side wins the election, do you think violence would be justified? And a surprising, large, significant double-digit percent on both sides said yes. Okay. Another question similar to that was, you know, would you consider a secession if the other side won? Meaning if you're a blue state guy, the blue states secede the other way around. Answer was also very high, like you were talking 20% type things. These are numbers we've never seen before. So there is no outcome to this coming election that's going to be copacetic. And that is not being priced into the markets. It possibly could be very upsetting for U.S. government debt market. So these are factors. We think we also have the biggest stock bubble in U.S. history, and therefore its implosion will be worse than any other prior bear market in the stocks, including 29 to 32, including dot-com, including the real estate bubble in 7. When this one breaks, it's a far bigger bubble. It lasted 13 years, not 3 or 4 or 5. And it saw the S&P go up 7-fold and NASDAQ 100 go up 16-fold, vastly beating any prior bull market. So the Fed did their job. They printed the money. They QE'd it all the way up. And now they got a problem when it breaks. It's going to be big. And therefore, money flows could be quite dramatic elsewhere.
Well, Michael, you paint an interesting picture where we could have a more protracted bear market in the general equities. We have geopolitical issues abroad and domestically. Like you say, there's probably not going to be a happy outcome no matter who wins the election. So a lot of reasons for gold to do well. But if the equities pull back, a lot of people have pointed out that gold equities and silver equities are still equities and that may drag them down. Do you think that the rising metals prices would keep them elevated, or would they get sucked down with the rest of the markets in a big corrective move?
It's possible from time to time you could have a sympathetic drop in the gold miners and the stock market. But if you go back through history, and I frankly did it over the weekend just to reaffirm it to myself, it's very rare. You have to have literally a crash event. Meaning, what's a crash event? Well, my definition is 35% in a couple of weeks. That's 29, 1987. And that October of 2008 event in the U.S. stock market was also approached those dimensions. In other words, percent drop over a short period of time. But other than that, ongoing declines in the stock market quite often are inverse. Well, just look at the last three or four weeks. Stock markets dropped, virtually so many days in a row that the financial press is surprised. And yet during that time, the gold miners have risen. And then today, look at today. Stock market's finally getting an up day. This is Monday, we're doing this, and gold miners are getting a down day. So to make that linkage, I think, is erroneous, and it will cause you to miss a major move in the miners. If that troubles you, then, and you're not in the miners, then you're going to miss it. And I think they're going to have an enormous move. Yes, there could be times where it seems like there's a linkage, but those are aberrant times. Those are not the norms. And also, as far as the competition to gold, I suggest one look at the Bitcoin action and look at NASDAQ 100. There's quite a bit of similarity. In fact, what's Bitcoin done over the last 3 weeks? Dropped 10,000 bucks from 72,000 down to 62, while the NASDAQ 100 dropped fairly sharply as well. What's going on today? NASDAQ's getting a bounce. Bitcoin's getting a bounce. Okay. I think Bitcoin is more linked to the stock market in terms of the speculative behavior than it is to, as a competitor to gold. And also, there's a threat to Bitcoin that I've mentioned in lectures I've given, panel discussions, and so forth. And that is, if it ever becomes competition in terms of to the Fed, meaning competing with their money, okay, in terms of a transactional unit, like it rose to, let's say, 5% of daily consumption in the U.S. transactions, or 10%, that's a threat to the government control over money. And hence, I would expect government to clamp down on it. We already know some governments around the world don't even allow it. But if it became a threat to the monopoly control over the money by the central bank, you can bet there'd be some legal steps taken. So, you know, and it's accessible. The government can see it via their computer analysis of your bank accounts and so forth in your computer. Whereas gold is, it's more anonymous. It's safer in that regard. So, no, I don't think the competition from crypto is a threat to gold. And I think also that once it becomes reality to a lot of the crypto investors that it's not moving with gold, it's moving more like the stock market, they're going to get awakened up at that point. I think they'll realize let's move over to gold and silver.
A lot of people that have postulated at that point comes where they continue the cryptos trading like tech stocks versus an anti-fiat trade. If it doesn't work out and they sync with the tech stocks, there may be a rotation out of some cryptos and into precious metals and monetary metals like gold and silver. When we look at the stocks, though, let's just zero in on something like GDX or GDXJ, whatever you'd like to use as far as an index on the gold equities. They have not been keeping pace with gold. They have done a little bit better recently that we saw a pop in them, but they are not anywhere near the leverage that people would have expected, not just at 2000 gold, but when we got up to 2400 gold. So how are you looking at something like GDX or the gold equities?
Yeah, I agree with that. What's happened since 2020 in the surge that occurred in from early 2020 to the summer, like August of 2020, silver in the miners vastly beat gold. I mean, they like tripled its gains, okay? But starting from about 2021, the miners and silver began to erode in performance, which while gold basically had a ceiling, the 2050, 2070 level for a couple of years, the miners kept making lower highs and silver kept making lower highs. So they pulled back in an arduous arm wrestling type process, whereas gold really sort of went sideways. So during that time, if you plotted the relative performance of miners or silver versus gold, you had a declining chart pattern. That decline is technically analyzable. We run the spread charts. We also look at momentum of the spreads. And we are now challenging in this recent surge since the February lows. Silver's gained more than gold. Miners have gained more than gold, again, since the February lows. And that recovery in the readings is threatening to break out over what's a three-year downtrend structure on both those spread relationships to gold. And if you get the breakout, and we're toying with the numbers this month, you know, if you close the spreads out much better than we've seen this month, you're going to break out. And that technically indicates to us that those two subcategories of the monetary metals are about to beat gold again. And I tend to expect to see that this month or next month in terms of an actual breakout in the spreads. So yes, miners are trading with $32, $33 on GDX. Their high was 45. And gold is a couple hundred dollars above its highs of 2020. So yeah, when you look at the net price, but when you plot the spread, there's a clear trend structure and we're challenging it. And I think we're going to break it out. When we do, our subscribers will pound the table and tell them it's definitely time to make the shift over into the miners and silver.
Well, just a question on silver stocks versus gold stocks. I don't know if you have a preference, but if you believe that silver could outperform gold, and it often does during strong bull legs, and often the silver stocks outperform the gold stocks, would you be more interested here in a contrarian standpoint in getting into the silver stocks versus
yep.
the gold stocks?
Mm-hmm. In our gold-silver mining report this weekend, we included that spread between SIL, S-I-L, which is the Global X Silver Miners ETF, and GDX. And it's frankly, the readings intra-month this month, not the monthly close yet, is above all the high readings of the last year. And it's breaking out on a spread basis. In other words, it's saying, yeah, the silver miners look like they're about to shift, just like I think silver is about to shift versus gold. I think the silver miners are about to shift to positive in relation to the gold miners. So I think it's, to some extent, probably better to be in the silver miners. But I just suggest that do it more broadly. Don't try to be so narrow. I think, GDX, after all, does contain a half dozen or so silver miners. So it's not totally just gold miners. I would view it more broadly and say it's best to be in the miners in general as opposed to gold and include some silver miners in that.
Makes sense to have a basket approach. Diversify
yep.
the risk a little bit. Well, what about copper, Dr. Copper, the health of the U.S. economy? It has popped up and it just broke up above last year's peak recently, up to 450 just on Friday's close. And
mm-hmm.
the copper stocks, the producers and something like COPEX have done well. How are you looking at
yep.
the red metal?
No, it broke out just crossing above $4 by our momentum metrics a month or so ago. And it's gained quite a bit since then. But I think the $5 high it made a couple of years ago is gone. I think it's going to be taken out. And so copper's basically, it was a little ahead of, but it's basically reflecting what we see as a general upturn in the Bloomberg Commodity Index, you know, which comprises all kinds of commodities, the grains, sugar, cocoa, coffee, copper, precious metals, and the energy. So I think it's reflecting a broader upturn. But copper does look quite potent. I've heard for a year or two now from copper mining experts that there's really a built-in shortage of potential to produce copper. So, if it gets rolling and if that's a true assessment, it will have a fundamental drive behind it as well, not just a monetary flow.
Well, and you mentioned that a lot of the commodities complex is starting to pick up. I noticed that just over the weekend, I was looking at it, that zinc prices are at the highest level they've been for a year. Aluminum prices are the highest level they've been since January. But you've really been pounding the table on grains and looking at how they could blowout. And you just put out an update on wheat. So maybe give us an update on the soft commodities.
Yeah, the grain complex wheat right now is toying with major breakout levels. And we measure it via weekly closes in relation to a certain long-term moving average, and we plot it as an oscillator. And if you looked at the oscillator, you would say, my goodness, what a base. In fact, it's 2 years wide, the base is. You don't see it on the price chart. Price chart has this general downward drift. Most of the decline occurred a year and a half ago. And since then, it's been a trickle, but still downward shift. When you look at the momentum chart, it is a clear, flat basing action with a horizontal that's been bumped so many times over the last 2 years, and we're crossing it now. We're trying to cross the level that causes the breakout. We think when it does, wheat will change temper and tone and start to go vertical instead of being quiet like it's been. And I suspect the corn and the beans won't be too far behind. They're not quite near numbers yet, but wheat is definitely near major breakout levels that could see its tone change dramatically. Now, I don't know what's going on in the fundamentals of wheat. That's not our job, but the technicals say, watch out. Something's happening here.
Well, I think some people listening will remember the move that we've seen over the last year in cocoa. So the question is, could something like wheat or corns or beans do what cocoa just did over the last year?
It's quite possible. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, again, it goes into the political equation, because that's just what the current, the guys trying to hold office don't want to see, is another resurgence of commodity prices between now and the election time. But I think it's going to happen. And I think we could also at the same time see a decline in stock asset prices, which also won't help those currently in power. And again, it's just, it mixes into the political element, the instability, you know, the sense of what's happening. And therefore, it engenders fear when there's that sense of uncertainty and lack of solidity. And I think these are just factors at the edge that will add to that, and also add to the problem the Fed's going to have, because, you know, they're supposedly fighting inflation, which they narrowly defined as commodity inflation. They don't care about stock price inflation. That's okay. But if all of a sudden the stock market starts to roll over, as we argue, you're going to get those data points that they claim they're looking at, which are actually been negative. The employment data points have been very negative, not positive. If you look inside what the data points are. In fact, the head of UBS trading said, you know, what's the Fed talking about? But once those data points start to change, then you're going to have the other mandate of the Fed, namely the employment mandate, cause them to want to go the other way. So they're split. They go schizo, but their mandates will be opposite. Very interesting. It'd be interesting times. And I think a lot of this is going to occur between now and the election, frankly. Not after, but a lot of this is going to occur before.
Well, just one more market that kind of ties in with that theme, Michael, of geopolitics, of uncertainty. It feeds into inflation, is the energy sector. It's one of the largest inputs in the commodity complex. Oil has been on a wild ride. You know, it finally did break up into the 80s again. Do you think it could keep blasting higher with the rest of the commodities complex, or is it such a dynamic market that it's moving to the beat of its own drum?
The energy complex led that last move in commodities. In October of 2020, MSA put out a report that said commodity explosion about to occur. And we put quotes around explosion. It's October 2020. At that point in time, the Bloomberg was trading around 70. By early 2022, it had doubled, gone to 140. Since then, we peaked and have pulled back down to 100 area. Right now, 102 on the Bloomberg. Energy was one of the major leaders in percentage terms of that first leg up. I think energy will participate, but I don't think it'll be the leader necessarily. I kind of have a bias that the grain complex could move to a leadership status in terms of, you know, what's gaining more on a percent basis, oil or wheat, for example. And already rice is looking quite good, too. It's something we don't look at too often, but the world does. So I think your foods could become very important this time around in terms of being the weightiest leaders within that complex. And of course, that's just what people in power here and elsewhere don't want to see, but it's a fact. And they're still very much underpriced too. It's not like we're dealing with high-priced commodities. If you look at Bloomberg now at 102, you think it's high-priced like the government claims. Well, go back and look at 2008. It was at 237. Go back and look at 2011. It was 175, I think. Okay, so we're very cheap, just above 100, compared to the last 10, 15 years or so of action. So people who think it's overvalued, Look at the charts. It's not. It's waking up.
Well, let's wrap it up on that point, Michael. It's something we definitely have to keep our eyes on, the overall commodity complex and how that feeds into pricing in everyday life. And yeah, food prices are going up. That is definitely going to get the world's attention. We always appreciate you coming on the KE Report and sharing just how you're looking at these markets. And if people don't follow Michael on social media or over at his site, Momentum Structural Analysis, definitely click on the link below this interview. It'll take you over to his website. And I recommend following Michael as he puts out his updates to the market. And Michael, we'll keep tabs on it. We'll touch base in a month or two, but always appreciate you coming on the KE Report and looking forward to our next conversation.
Thank you much, Chad.